Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Continuing our conversation about representation in The Hollywood Reporter's very first Pride issue featuring the 50 most powerful LGBTQ players in Hollywood, we turn to my conversation with one of the people listed, showrunner and filmmaker Jill Soloway. The writer-director, who identifies as non-binary and uses they-them pronouns, is known for their Emmy-winning and groundbreaking Amazon series Transparent. The story is based on Soloway's own lived experience having a parent who transitioned later in life before they embraced their own queer identity. When asked by The Hollywood Reporter what LGBTQ story they would like to see on screen, Soloway replied, quote, "The journey of a non-binary person realizing they feel most stable when their own gender is constantly moving. Folks who feel male and female and both and neither in a constantly swirling world need their heroes too." In my conversation with Jill Soloway, we discussed all this along with their memoir, She Wants It, Desire, Power, and Toppling the Patriarchy, which is also partly a gender equality manifesto. I began our conversation by asking when they first started writing the memoir and discovering their queer identity.
I started writing it about 4 years ago. So in fact, when I sold the book, I was identified as straight. I was married, hetero, even femme presenting, you know, just kind of regular American mom. And so I sold the book as kind of like a classic tale of a woman trying to have it all, family and business.
When did you look at your first draft and say, this no longer applies?
Then I was able to use the writing of the book as a way to almost like have like a flashlight on my head as I was spelunking through the why am I like this? Mm-hmm. Trying to go through my past. I already had to go through my past with Transparent to look at, you know, what happens once a parent comes out as trans. When you look back at everything that happened when you were kids before your parent had come out, what was that life? What was that secrecy? Where were those hiding spaces? How did the secrets stand in for the boundaries? That was really the theme that I realized Transparent was about, that people keep secrets instead of having boundaries. So, yeah, I kind of needed the book because it was a different way of thinking and creating from writing dialogue and casting it. It was almost like my exterior was being taken care of with Transparent, where I could write these scenes and have these actors act them out. But my interior, where I was forcing myself to look at the choices I'd made throughout my life, was what was powering the writing of the book.
It's interesting, you know, as you talk about how we're struggling with this, I think about our kids, because we have kids about the same age, and my kid came home from school, and every paper he has now says his name and then preferred pronoun on the top of the paper. And
I thought, amazing.
You know, he's never going to, it's for him, this is just going to be part of his life, and there's someone in his class who a couple weeks changed the pronoun.
Fantastic.
And he's just sort of like, okay, can you play kickball? Like, it's not really phazing him, and I'm thinking to myself, well, that's how the change is going to happen. It's through the children.
Yeah. Yeah. Born in the wilderness.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The title, though, we have She Wants It.
Right.
And that can, you know, be as a pejorative, like, she wants it. Or it can be, you know, the Tiffany Haddish, like, she ready. She wants it.
Yeah.
Who's the she?
Yeah. Well, it's the person. It's exactly that question that made me want to keep this title is, you know, who's the she? And it's really who's saying she. Because I think if two men are saying, oh, she wants it, it is pejorative. It's turning her into an object. And if two women are saying about another woman, they're complimenting her. So what an odd thing that the same words would be construed as an utter dangerous insult when said by two men. And a real like celebration of power when said by women. So she's a lot of people. She is who I used to be. She is the idea of the, you know, unnamed, you know, in terms of the she wants it, it's sort of, you know, I talk a lot in my book about the divided feminine and how men have different uses for two different kinds of women. If a woman is admired or adored, if she is their wife, mother, daughter, she gets a certain kind of treatment in their minds and in real life. And then there's this degraded half of the divided feminine, the so-called sluts, the hookers, the passed out women, the women who get no respect, the women who aren't believed. Men have this divide, and women have to choose. And that's really the divided feminine in patriarchy. So that's the she, that degraded half of the divided feminine. That's the she that I'm concerned with, that I'm hoping to bring story to with the book.
One of the passages I really enjoyed in the book, and maybe just because it hit home as a working mom, is your description of the way fathers are perceived and the way mothers are perceived as not just a parent, but how the gender plays into it, whether you're good or bad. Would you read this paragraph? This
yes. Movie,
I read this and I was like, who can I call and read this to?
Yeah, this is a funny one, right? This cracks me up. Yeah, this is sort of like as I started to understand how I saw myself and other people saw me as in different genders. I am the best father in the world. I'm far better as a father than I am as a mother. Imagine a dad like this. Every day at 6 p.m., I get home from my really high-powered job where I make plenty of money for everybody. I have taken care of dinner by checking in with the sitter on the phone at around 3 and saying, yes, yes, turkey meatballs will be perfect. Thank you. Maybe we should have some broccoli just to be safe. And then when I get home, dinner is on the table, and I thank the sitter, and I dismiss her, and I sit with my children, and I hold space for questions about their day. After dinner, I spend time with them, make sure they have their bath, and I put them to bed. If you imagined a man doing the things I just described, you would think of him as an exceptionally emotionally connected and gentle man, a veritable master of the universe, doing everything at home and at work. But now look at me as a mother. I didn't pick my kids up after school. I didn't actually cook the dinner. We didn't do crafts, sports, or homework together. I wasn't a school volunteer. I couldn't comb their hair without making them cry. I wasn't warm and yummy and soft and cozy. I didn't rock them in my arms. I didn't make breakfast. I got no housework done. I didn't get to the gym. I didn't do that thing they tell women to do, to have sex whether or not you want to keep the marriage going. If I were a man, I'd be in the top 1% of all fathers. As a mother, I was a complete and total failure.
And you did smile.
Yeah, smile. Why aren't you smiling?
We're speaking with Jill Soloway about her new book, She Wants It, Desire, Power, and Toppling the Patriarchy. So the first chapter of your book is called Are You Sitting Down? And you recall a phone call from your dad when he revealed himself to be trans. And then you had to hold the secret for a little bit. He hadn't told anyone else yet. What was it like in that time when you had that information and no one else did?
Yeah, and I also just want to mention, because there's some social media feedback going on. So you're gendering my father as my father, and you're using the word he, because in the beginning of the book, I use the word father and I use the word
right.
he, even though now when we would speak about my parent, we would say parent instead of father, and we would say she.
Carrie.
Yes. And it's a really sensitive time for somebody like me who identifies as trans, who wants to go back and write about a part of my life when a trans person identified as male. And I just want to make sure that we mentioned that we are currently misgendering Carrie when we have this conversation, if we're using the word father or he. So it's a difficult thing when different people have different experiences of certain people and want to tell their stories. Mm-hmm. It's a real confusing thing for me to ask, how do I tell the story of what it felt like to have somebody come out to me who I thought was a man without misgendering them? So
it's your story, though. You tell your story.
It's complex. Well, I mean, my sister and I are sort of incredibly close, and we sort of share a mind. So it was really like I couldn't hold on to it until my sister knew, and I was just waiting and waiting and waiting for my parent to call my sister so that my sister and I could talk and say, what's going on? So yeah, I was kind of just texting my sister and saying, call dad, call dad, call dad, call dad. So
now that you think about that time, having had the experience you've had in the past few years, do you understand something better about it? About that, the time that your parent was going through?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think I'm so lucky that as a parent, I was able to make these incremental steps with myself where there wasn't the big coming out of the closet reveal. You know, I even think about when Caitlyn Jenner was on, I think, the Diane Sawyer show.
Yeah.
And she was in some ways like, you know, saying goodbye as her previous self and like coming out as a new self in this like very crisp corner, like old me, new me. I think a lot of that is due to transphobia and trans misogyny, you know, where it's like, we don't want to see the in-between. We just want to see you when you look like a perfect, beautiful, camera-ready woman. The in-betweens are messy. The on-the-ways, the non-binaries, the word trans means bridge. And I think people first we're really comfortable with saying this person went from male to female or female to male. But a lot of people sort of stay on the bridge or want to be seen on the bridge. And I think it's a lot, it's messy for such a binary society. So I've been lucky enough to just move very, 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 very slowly. It's like, cut my hair a little more, a little less makeup. Oh, wow. I like the way men's underwear feels instead of women's. You know what? Shopping in the men's department kind of feels good. Okay, wow. I'm getting gendered as male out in the world. People are saying, sir. Hey, that's kind of fun. You know, people come up to a table and go, ladies, may I take your order? And I think, who the F are they talking to? You know, how do you see the word lady when you see me? So it's been totally incremental with me. I think with my parent, because of the way they were raised in a society that's completely transphobic and completely misogynistic, particularly for people who are assigned male at birth, claiming a trans identity is so hard. Julia Serrano is an amazing trans philosopher, and she said a couple of things about why, where transphobia and trans misogyny comes from. Because you may see somebody who was assigned female at birth, and they're clearly assigned female at birth, and they're wearing a man's suit, and you wouldn't even look. And if you see somebody who's assigned male at birth and they're wearing a dress, you go, oh my God, what am I looking at? And Julia Serrano, her idea was that there is so much misogyny in this world that we assume that if anybody would choose, quote unquote, choose to give up their male privilege, they must be crazy.
When you were writing the show, Transparent, and you mentioned just on Twitter how there are people who are having issues with the use of the language and the choice to use what word when and what pronoun when. You wrote it. It came from a good place. It came from your heart. It came from your experience. When you looked back, do you see some of the mistakes you made?
Yes, totally.
And what's an example?
Well, casting a cis man as a trans woman was so hurtful to trans women and such a problem. You know, representation is an issue just for any group that says we need more to see of ourselves. So if you had a person who was white who was playing somebody who was Asian, you know, that would be incredibly offensive, full stop. But for trans women who are in the midst of being accused of being men dressing up, the problem of having a man play a trans woman that actually involves dressing up, because we're on a TV show, is a really dangerous conception for things like the public safety of trans women in bathrooms. So not only were we not allowing trans women to represent themselves, we were also continuing a stereotype that was and is incredibly life-threatening. So I just have to go on the record constantly and apologize to the trans community and ask for forgiveness for having to have had my education in public.
When you think about your experience, you'd written a memoir in 2005, right? Tiny Ladies in Shiny Pants.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this because I read Roxane Gay's books out of order. I read Hunger first and then Bad Feminist. And doing that, I thought about all the pain that was in Hunger that's not in Bad Feminist, because she's really sort of decided to embrace all the difficulty and her sexual assault. And in Bad Feminist, she just kind of seems like, I'm a free spirit, I'm out there. Are there things from that first memoir that who you are now is hidden in there and you didn't see it? Or?
Yeah, it's interesting. There are a lot of things in there that are me trying to figure this stuff out. You know, I talk in this book about what it was like to go through puberty really late, like at the age of 17, and really suddenly have the kind of body that made men think they wanted to see what it looked like naked. That was a really overwhelming and fast and brutal shift for me, where I went from being a person with thoughts and a mind to attempting to navigate what men wanted from me. And I think because I was a curious person and an ambitious person, I didn't experience it as trauma. I was like, oh, this body is an all-access pass to new experiences. I can get into any room I want to get into. So I'm going because I want to see. I want to see what it's like to meet famous guys. I want to see what happens when I go through this door.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think I was putting myself in experiences where I was re-experiencing myself as an object over and over again, attempting to have subjectivity out of it by pretending like I was consenting to all of it, when in fact I wasn't tuned into my body whatsoever. I didn't know what I wanted. I was letting or allowing things to happen that I wasn't sure if I wanted them to happen. And I think that's it's kind of a tragedy.
I have to ask about the toppling the patriarchy, because that is what you yelled during one of your acceptance speeches. And I wish I could say that I came up with this question, but I didn't. My producer, Rosie, did. She said, how would you explain to an auditorium of kindergartners what the toppling the patriarchy means?
Well, patriarchy is men mostly protecting men, mostly protecting male power. So it's men protecting male power. So to kindergartners, I would say the patriarchy is, you know, you look around at the pictures of all of the presidents, you know, around your classroom, and it's like, guy, 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 wait, man, man, man. They're all men. Topping the patriarchy would be that, if how many presidents are there? 100? We're going to have 100 women first. We're going to have 100 queer people first, and then we'll get back to men. That we need to start to create equality and equity in leadership. And the dream of taking power and handing it to people who are not white cis men is a dream about peace and love and tolerance. Maybe even the end of war. That's what I would say to kindergartners.
I think they like that. As your book came out, there was news about this being the final season of Transparent on Amazon, and that the final season is going to be a movie musical.
Yeah.
It's going to be a little bit of Yentl.
A little bit of Jesus Christ Superstar. It's going to be some singing, some dancing, some choreography.
Is Maura Pfefferman going to be represented in some way? Now that Jeffrey Tambor
is that
left.
A spoiler? I feel like that's a spoiler. I just want to let people come see it, because there's such a juicy way that we're handling that question that I don't want to give it away.
What do you hope people take away from your book?
I like when people read books with a pen in their hand or a highlighter, and they fold in pages, and they... You know, for me, when I read certain writers like Maggie Nelson or Masha Gessen, Eileen Miles, like these amazing thinkers, these people who blow my mind, and I get my pen out when I'm reading, and I just dog ear pages, and I think, like what you had, you know, I want to share this with a friend. I hope people have that visceral, tactile experience of feeling like they're getting a letter from a best friend.
That was my conversation with writer-director Jill Soloway, who was featured on the Hollywood Reporter's list of the 50 most powerful LGBTQ players in Hollywood.